Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And we are part of a machine. I think pretty much most, unless you happen to be like that sort of that iconic, like, guy living out in the middle of the desert in a shack, or, you know, George O'Keefe. Shutting herself away.
Off the grid.
Yeah, living off the grid and not having any contact with people. Unless you're doing that kind of life, you're probably part of the machine or a machine.
That's right.
Yeah, like I got up this morning, got into MARTA. Suddenly I'm in the crowd with the other commuters, and I'm instantly part of something that is kind of like a big animal, like a big super organism, a big cranky, kind of stinky superorganism that crams itself into trains.
And delivers itself to the front door of its respective workplaces.
Right.
And where then, it becomes part of another superorganism.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, yeah, just like us, How Stuff Works, Discovery Communications, it's a giant thing, and we're all just like parts of it.
We're part of the hive.
Yeah. And we're not, I'm not, again, not saying that as a, as any kind of a slam on the man or on corporate America or anything like that. Because it's, as the more we look, it's like no matter where you are, again, unless you're living in the desert in that shack or up in an isolated apartment on the Upper East Side with the tinfoil over all the windows, you're a part of some sort of social animal.
Right. You're part of a community. We call it a community, right?
Yeah. Now, if bees do it, we call it a swarm.
Right.
If ants do it, we call it, I guess that's a swarm too, or an army. At any rate.
Yeah. And when birds do it, and they do it in mass, mm-hmm. in thousands and thousands of birds, and they undulate over the horizon, we just call that scary.
Yeah.
Because we're like, what is that? It looks like a funnel cloud of birds coming at us.
And
why is it doing that?
And beady eyes.
Right.
Yeah. My wife finds the tongues terrifying on birds, like they're black tongues. She's, anytime we go to R. Thomas, which is a restaurant here in Atlanta that has birds in cages outside, she's always a little freaked out by, like, the toucans. So
did you know that guy started the Popeyes chain?
Did he?
Yeah, and R. Thomas is sort of his way of giving back to the community in terms of healthy food and birds.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. But no, but yes, birds, super swarms, super organisms happen every single day.
And one of the reasons they're kind of, they can often be unnerving is that it gets down to the basic idea that an ant, a single ant, is nothing. I can outsmart an ant. Most people can't.
Sure.
Everybody can outsmart an ant.
And you can take a magnifying glass to it and burn it too.
Exactly.
If you were a 3-year-old who was
a single bird,
like
you
that.
Can take that on with a tennis racket. If it's bees, one bee is not an issue. But when they swarm, A, you're dealing with a large mass of things, but also you're dealing with something, you're suddenly dealing with something that has, an emergent intelligence.
Right.
It's basically a macro intelligence that arises from local interactions.
Okay.
All right. It's in not merely simple interactions, that are necessary to coordinate movement, but a group intelligence that learns, that achieves goals, and engages in an overall self-preservation.
Okay. And that's what I think is so cool about superorganisms, is that, like you said, on their own as individuals, they're a little worthless, right, in the insect community. But together they can accomplish incredible things. And it's still somewhat of a mystery to scientists. I mean, they've begun to figure out why birds in swarms of thousands can turn themselves into these crazy vortex circular shapes, mm-hmm. and not run into each other or drop dead in collision, you know.
Yeah, or like fish that get into a swarm and it kind of looks like a single thing, like a single larger sea creature.
Yeah, which is so cool. If you've mm-hmm. never seen footage on that before, it's really worth checking out. But again, it's pointing to that sort of intelligence, which is far superior than any individual one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Steve Johnson's book, Emergence, which deals with this and is generally regarded as a really good introduction to all this, he lays out like a few necessary items on the checklist for emergence intelligence.
Okay.
One of them is a critical mass of participation. So you need a minimum number of participants in a social group for if I was on MARTA and it was like three dudes, there's not really going to be much of a, it's kind of like a mob. You know, like if three guys are standing outside of a business protesting, people aren't going to say, there's a mob out there. There's no telling what it'll do. No, it's just like Joe, Charlie, and Mary. And you can sort of deal with them on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to be that thing that takes over.
Well, and even in riots, right, there seems to be some sort of self-organizing aspect to it.
Right, yeah. There's been some really interesting stuff coming out recently talking about the at the time of this recording, mm-hmm. Current protests in Egypt.
Egypt, yeah.
You know, because it gets down to, like, you can't, with a group like this, you can't say, oh, there's the leader. No, there are many leaders that have sort of organizing roles in it. But you can't, that's why the mob is such a scary prospect to any seat of power. Mm-hmm. Because what does it want? You can't, you're dealing with an intelligence that can't be boiled down to a single individual.
Right, right. That's right. You can't appease that one single individual.
Right.
And yet there's an intelligence that comes from that, and there are demands that come from that.
Yeah. I would like to think back to, a corporation, like any kind of corporation or big business. Like what motivates everyone? Like the lowly creative type may just want to make something they can feel proud of.
Mm-hmm.
The sales rep might be motivated by, you know, interdepartment competition. You know, mm-hmm. who can get the biggest sale? Who's going to be the top seller? Who's going to get yelled out by Alec Baldwin? the accountant may just have eyes on, you know, the bonus. And the CEO is, you know, might just be chasing the American dream of filling his solid gold submarine with Brazilian supermodels and circus pandas.
Why not?
Yeah, it's within their grasp.
That's right.
So yeah, but when you talk about the corporation as a whole, like what does it want? You're dealing with a different set of goals. And
yeah,
desires.
And the parallels are there, right? I mean, because there's mm-hmm. a certain kind of intelligence that happens when you put a group of people together. I mean, you come up with solutions mm-hmm. that you might not have come up with yourself, mm-hmm. or that people collaborate on, and all of a sudden you've created a thing,
yeah.
right?
Now, other items on Steve Johnson's list: a local focus, even if the effects are more widespread.
Mm-hmm.
So, like the local focus of of a corporation might be just to, you know, it may just boil down to making money.
Right.
Or, you know, or getting, or if it's like a nonprofit, it might be to, you know, to bring about a certain social change or to get certain legislature passed. In the event of a protest, it may be to oust a particular individual or to oppose a particular unpopular, law or mm-hmm. ruling. Then another item on this list is random interactions between groups and individuals outside. So this is necessary for a learning process. You know, it's like the mob pushing. It's like, you know, any kind of scene where it's like the man with his police and his riot shields on one side, and it's the protesters on the
right.
other. And there's like a there's kind of a push. There's a testing of the two sides as the mob is learning. It's
right.
seeing what it can get away with, what it can do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, learning what its boundaries are.
Right.
And, you know, there's so many people on the lookout and they're all gathering data and pooling it in one way or another. Right.
Right.
Which is the same thing if you look at in some, with some insects, with some species, that they're all kind of like ants, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They're communicating with pheromones, right?
Right.
And they're basically, they're saying, okay, hey, I'm going to leave this chemical trail to this food source that I just found. And then all of a sudden you've got, one ant following that. 5 ants, 10 ants, 1,000 ants, and that's how you're getting the sort of group movement toward that food source, or the barometric pressure drops, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and the ants start building these little sand turrets to protect themselves from what they think may be rain pretty soon. So again, it's the, that collective information and sharing of it and this self-directing movement that comes out of it that's so fascinating.
Yeah, with ants, it's important to note, and just to remind everybody, there are like 12,000 known ant species.
Yeah.
They've been ruling the earth for about 140 million years. And while an ant colony or even a beehive will have a queen, these are not rulers. Like the queen plays an important reproductive role.
Right.
In a hive or a colony. But they're not calling the shots.
She's just a cog in the wheel.
Right. Yeah. We label them a queen, and that comes with certain anthropomorphic baggage.
Right.
But just leave that baggage behind, because the queen is just there to pump out more bees or ants.
Right. She's just useful for her ovaries, really, to
right.
boil it down to that. And that's true of all these species, right? These mm-hmm. insect species that show emergence.
Yeah.
But there's no one leader. There's no boss.
Yeah. She's not saying, hey, I've got an idea how to solve this problem about food foraging. No, it's emerging from the interactions of the group mm-hmm. as it pushes against outside stimuli.
And what the group needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an interesting study from Stanford University's Deborah Gordon. And this dealt particularly with forager ants and figuring the ant colony, figuring out how many foragers it needs to send out.
Okay.
And they found that, it came down to interactions between foragers and patrollers. So when a forager has contact with a patroller,
mm-hmm.
that's been out, you know, looking around, they end up passing on these pheromones. But a forager needs several contacts, no more than like 10 seconds apart before it'll go out. So there has to be like, it's like a very simple, like, you know, here are the patrollers coming in. And once it like counts off enough pheromones within a certain amount of time,
okay.
then it knows, oh, I need to go out and collect.
Okay, so it's sort of like, again, it's that mass movement, right?
Right.
So once it starts to accumulate all that data from 10 of those, then mm-hmm. it says, okay, that's the direction I need to go in.
Yeah, they concluded that foragers use the rate of their encounters with patrollers to tell if it's safe to go out.
Okay.
So, you know, in case there's like an anteater out there just gobbling up everything, they won't just blindly march out into the maw, you know?
There's something altruistic about that, it seems.
Yeah.
You know, again, that's anthropomorphizing this, but mm-hmm. it does seem like, you know, okay, well, I've got your back here, or, you know, or I may even die for the cause as I'm patrolling.
Yeah. And it's, and
that was so romanticized.
It was.
I can't help it.
It's hard not to get romantic about it.
Yeah.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
Another really interesting part of all this is that but we've been able to look at some of these systems and learn from them
yeah.
and apply them to our own human systems, our own transportation or delivery systems, such as There's an industrial medical gas guru by the name of Air Liquid. And they worked with an AI firm to develop a computer model based on algorithms that were inspired by the foraging behavior of Argentine ants.
Okay.
And this is, again, the species that we're talking about that deposits chemical pheromones.
Mm-hmm.
And uses that to dictate, you know, how many foragers need to go out to get the food. So Air Liquid was able to combine the ant approach with other artificial intelligence techniques, throw in data about like the weather, customer mm-hmm. demand and all, and they use that to figure out how much of their product they need to actually ship out.
Okay. And this is based on the algorithms
right.
that they observed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, based an algorithm on the way the ants are handling their problem, and they're able to come up with a way to handle their distributing needs.
Okay. And you've heard of Boyd technology before too, which is sort of similar in that,
Boyd.
Like Boyd.
This is B-O-I-D?
B-O-I-D, which I guess is sort of a Boyd pronunciation of bird, right?
Yeah.
And this is Craig Reynolds, who created an artificial life program. And this is a distributed behavioral model to simulate the motion of a flock of birds on a computer. So same thing.
Right.
Basically.
And now this goes back to the really central human need to make believable bat swarms in the movie Batman
yes,
Returns, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I mean, that wasn't why he actually created this technology, but that's one of the uses for it was CGI is to simulate something that looked realistic in terms mm-hmm. of a flock of bats. But what he observed is that each Boyd is implemented as an agent and moves according to its own understanding of the changing environment. So think about bird formations like V formations. There are four rules with this.
Okay.
First, a Boyd must move away from other Boyds. There are two cliffs, duh, because you don't want to collide. Second, they have to fly in a general direction that the flock is moving. Okay. Third, they need to minimize their exposure to flock's exterior by moving toward the perceived center, which is interesting if you think about that V formation.
I like how your use of Boyd has made you pronounce toward more.
Toward.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know. That's why he came up with this name. He's like, this is totally going to screw with podcasters in the future.
I'm taking the spirit of it, you know, I'm running with it. And then fourth, a Boyd should move laterally away from any Boyd that blocks its view. So that, I mean, that's very simple, right? Taking the four simple rules and creating, this algorithm, that has also been used by Southwest Airlines. They've got a routing system in which the pilots try to find the best airport gate based on the group information coming in. So again, you've got the group intelligence aspect of it.
Yeah. It's kind of like ants figuring out which entry to the colony to take when returning home.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's a little bit scary with a plane just because you think, well, okay, I'm relying on the group intelligence for this. But over and over again, there's so many different studies and counting jelly beans, you know,
yeah,
guessing the weight of something.
Yeah, yeah. Like just the basic like second, third grade activity of getting all the kids to guess the jelly bean number. And then
right.
everybody comes up with these totals and some kids may be way out. Some kids don't know what numbers are and they're like, you know, drawing a cat on their,
right.
their ballot. But when you put them all together and you get an average, you can estimate it, more or less exactly how many there are in there.
The mean, right. The mm-hmm. mean of that group estimate is always closer or the closest to what it actually is, which is astounding.
The main key here is that you want a diverse members. You want independent minded members.
Yeah.
And you want a mechanism of voting or averaging to figure out how it works.
Right. Okay. You don't want like 50 engineers all in the same room, right? I mean, you actually want it to be a diverse
right.
population of people. I mean, you could have 50 engineers in a room, but the point is that it doesn't really matter. You can have people from all sort of socioeconomic strata, giving their information, and the mean will always be, more accurate.
It's kind of like the whole, how many, blank does it take to fill in a light bulb, you know? Cause, I mean, it's always a joke about like how many hipsters, how many, mechanics, how many, you know, blondes or whatever. Does it take? And it's kind of, the message is kind of, if you don't have a diverse group, they're not going to be able to fulfill even a simple task to the best of their ability.
Right.
But if it were a priest, a rabbi, and whatever the third one is, then an engineer, then they'd have that light screwed in no time.
That's right. Yeah. It takes a village, I guess, is the point of whole emergence here. I mean, it really is. It's like it's such a simple construct, but it really has changed the way that we think about intelligence
mm-hmm.
and the way that we operate in our own society. And the sort of meaning that we ascribe to CEOs or kings or presidents, if we all are essentially self-organizing, it like ants, then, and we don't necessarily need a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And of course we need it like psychologically, right? We're still going to be okay because we're going to still come out in theory, with something that makes sense for our community, right?
Yeah.
Because we're going to be acting in our best interests.
There's, along those lines and kind of taking into a slightly more troublesome territory. There's a guy by the name of John Robb. He wrote a book called Brave New War, and he has a really cool blog called Global Guerrillas. And he made an interesting point where he pointed to the insurgency in Iraq. In Iraq is a kind of emergence intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, he talked about it as, quote, a complex series of local interactions that leads to shifts in its behavior that reflect a complex learning, goal attainment, and self-preservation despite a lack of a leadership hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And he boils this down then to three, like, key facts about the insurgency in Iraq. That, one, the insurgency will continue to improve over time. Two, that breakout is possible. And three, that it is impossible to discern the motives of this movement. So, I found that interesting commentary, you know, because it's the idea that you're not fighting a single individual. That as much as everyone like to, you know, believe, it's like, all right, this guy, let's find him, kill him or you know, overthrow him and,
right.
and it's done. But no, you're dealing with a far more complicated, social and political, situation, but also you're dealing with a movement that doesn't have a leader that's, you're dealing with an emergence intelligence. And again, how do you figure out what that wants?
And is the second point, the breakout, is that the aspect almost like with a bird flock where it all of a sudden it changes direction and that,
yeah,
you know, you maybe have the movement of several birds and then that prompts, the other ones to sort of follow domino-like.
Yeah. Or like with, you know, sometimes you'll have like whales that'll wash up on the beach because one has kind of like, has gone haywire,
mm-hmm.
And the others just follow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This technology is also being used with robots, of course, right?
Right. Yeah.
Artificial intelligence. It's based on the collective behavior, again, of decentralized self-organized systems, just to throw that out there again. And again, it's identifying best solutions and communicating them. So they're hoping to have this same sort of behavior in robots. And how it could be applied is that you could use something called morphogenesis to create a group of robots that can reconfigure and undertake different functions. For instance, you could have a group of 10 robots that may communicate among each other by emitting different color lights. And that light, if it's green and blue, could mean that the other robots need to attach to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And create some sort of formation. And the formation could be to traverse some sort of gap in the landscape,
right.
If that's what the robots were doing.
Or to become Voltron.
Or to become, yeah. Exactly, become stack up on each other. Or it could be used to form a shovel shape to push a heavy object. So they're trying to use, again, that swarm technology there. But more interestingly, I think that at Georgia Tech, of course, where they're doing tons of crazy stuff with robots and creating robot armies, they've developed palm-sized robots to use in combat zones. And they're smart enough to go off on their own and alert you when they find something. So they're trying to figure out how best to have these bots interact with each other. And right now it's looking like the research is favoring a decentralized approach in which the individual robots would share information among their companions to form a more complete picture. So, of course, what are we talking about here? Emergence intelligence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, here you go again. Robots.
Emergence intelligence. Emergence intelligence, military intelligence, I guess.
You could say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, anytime we talk about robots, which I know we've been doing a lot lately, we sort of get a little bit depressed because we think, oh God, they're being programmed to destroy us again or destroy someone or do something. But I think that, the really cool thing about emergence is that it could actually lead to a better understanding, of our own human nature.
Right. Right?
If we apply that sort of intelligence to ourselves. And I am not saying that we don't need presidents, CEOs, or power structures or hierarchy in place.
Yeah, because without the CEO, the people who make the golden submarines are not going to make a living.
Right?
It's very important.
Yeah, I mean, the economy will go down. It'll be a bad thing. But I think that it's interesting to think that we've got the knowledge that we are self-directing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something comforting in that. In that, you know, maybe, again, here I am romanticizing, feeling a bit romantic in this one. But given the chance, maybe it could bring out the better angels of our nature.
Yeah, as we figure out how to make a machine culture work, we can see how we should actually make a human culture work.
Right. Yeah.
I dig it.
Okay, we'll go with it. Let's put it into place.
Hey, so let us know what you think. If you've seen some cool examples of emergence intelligence in the people around you, in the animals around you, or the company that you're a part of, or even in machines and robots, let us know.
That's right. And if locusts start converging, don't worry. They can't help it. That's what they do.
Yeah, don't hate the individual locust. It's the mob mentality.
That's right.
So, hey, I have a couple of listener mail items here to read. The first comes from Lisa, and this was left on our Facebook page. She says, I like to listen to your podcast as I fall asleep, which is great. It helps me sleep. I listen to it again once I'm awake, while I learn the stuff while I'm asleep. The side effect to all this, really strange and scary dreams. So,
sorry about that.
Which, it'll happen. I forget if I mentioned this, but when we were researching our podcast on the book Radioactive,
yeah.
I was really reading that and researching it right before bed, and I had a whole bunch of crazy dreams with like atomic tests going on a college campus, and it was kind of unsettling.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say I haven't been able to access my dreams lately, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, because it's just loaded with robots running wild.
Yeah, robo nannies and robot locusts.
Cool. I have another. This one's an email from our listener, Chris, and he says, I just want to tell you that there are several types of deafness. In your podcast, The Werewolf Principle, you stated that deaf people don't get motion sick. That would only be if they had neural deafness. There are two basic types of deafness, neural and conductive. The neural deafness is when the cochlea doesn't send the sounds to the brain because the cochlea isn't working or the cochlea is missing. The conductive hearing loss is when the sound doesn't get to the cochlea. This occurs when the little bones in the ear, malleus, incus, and stapes don't send the sound to the cochlea, or the eardrum is missing. If you are going to make people deaf, you would have to do something to the cochlea or the malleus, incus, or stapes. Just wanted you to know. So,
that's all right.
Cool. I should have maybe looked up the pronunciation on all those things before I plowed through that email. But
I felt like you were going Latin there. It was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, if you have anything to let us know about, you can drop by our Twitter or our Facebook account. We are Blow the Mind on both of those. And we keep that updated with all sorts of cool links to stuff going on and how stuff works. And also, neat little news stories and mind-blowing tidbits from throughout the web.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Speedway.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.